This is News in No Time. Ed Gordon on today's roundtable. The CBC defends Jefferson, and the outcome of a hate crimes trial may depend on whether the jury thinks the N-word is racist. Joining us today to discuss these topics and more from our headquarters in Washington, D.C., Joe Davidson. He's an editor at The Washington Post. From member station WLRN in Miami, Republican strategist Tara Setmeyer, and Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of globalization and education at New York University, joins us from member station WLIU in Southampton, New York. All right, folks, let's take a look at what is going on within the Democratic ranks, Joe Davidson, and that is we're finding that Democratic leadership is suggesting that William Jefferson give up his committee position on what is a very powerful committee, I should say, Ways and Means. We are finding now that the CBC is standing up against Nancy Pelosi and others, suggesting that Congressman Jefferson, who continues to say he is innocent and denies all wrongdoing in connection with a federal bribery investigation, deserves the presumption of innocence. Mel Watt really firing back at Nancy Pelosi this week.
Well, I think the caucus is upset because they sense unequal treatment, you might say. There are others in Congress who have been accused of crimes but have not had to, as Mel Watt put it, there's been no precedent nor rule which required them to step down from a committee. So the caucus is not coming out and saying that Jefferson is innocent. And clearly there's a lot of evidence has been exposed or revealed that indicates he's going to have a tough time if he goes to trial. But I do think there's concern in the caucus and among black people generally that when black people are accused of a crime, that they are treated differently, that is to say more harshly than white people who are accused of similar crimes.
Marcella, we should note that, again, they're talking about the presumption of innocence and that it would take a full House vote to force Mr. Jefferson to step aside. But what of what Joe brings up for minorities across the board? Do you believe that they're given the same opportunity in positions of defense?
Well, clearly the issue here is one of process and one of timing. The investigation will take its course, and there will be a time when these decisions will need to be made. In the meantime, of course, the presumption of innocence is paramount, and there really should not be a double standard here for members of Congress as a function of race, of ethnicity. So we need to move forward cautiously, and we need to wait and see what the evidence brings up. And there will be a time to address the congressman's need to resign.
Let me ask you something, Marcelo. Just
stay on.
In America today, do you believe that the idea of presumption of innocence, whether it's in this case or often in trials, is more style than substance? Do you believe that we as Americans believe in that ideal anymore?
I think that there is a problem. There is a problem, and that's why this needs to be very, very cautiously handled. There is a problem in that our criminal justice system seems to work very, very differently in terms of presumption of innocence for members of ethnic minorities and for members of the dominant society. So, of course, there is a problem, and therefore, in such highly visible cases, we need to be extra careful that the process follows the form, follows the timing, and that everyone is treated according to the same principles.
All right, Tara, let me take you where I think you're going to take us anyway at some point in time if we stay on this topic, and that is the political fallout for all of this. How much do you believe that Jefferson, who on a national scale is not a power player per se, how much of this white-hot light that shines on him now is going to be a political problem for Democrats, if at all?
Well, obviously, the Democratic leadership anticipates this becoming a problem, or else Nancy Pelosi wouldn't take this position. The Democrats have been running on this culture of corruption against Republicans, thinking this was going to be a hallmark issue going into the fall elections because of scandals on the Republican side. And then here you have William Jefferson, who allegedly was caught with $90,000 in his freezer, and blatant corruption allegation here for him has rang very true across the country. Even though he's not normally wouldn't be a high-profile congressman, he has been propelled into a national spotlight because of the seriousness of this corruption allegation. So they're looking at this from a purely political fallout perspective, which is why they're saying, listen, do the honorable thing here and resign quietly so that the Republicans can't shoot back at us and negate the whole culture of corruption tactic that they were going to use in the fall. But I just want to make another quick point about the presumption of innocence and what the Congressional Black Caucus is doing here. It's amazing to me how there's a selective application of this presumption of innocence, because they want that to be applied here for their own, but yet was that same presumption of innocence given to the white alleged rapists in the Duke rape case? That wasn't, they all ran behind them. Not saying the Congressional Black Caucus, but the presumption of innocence doesn't seem to all, it doesn't, it, that, that, inconsistent applicability of that runs on both sides, depending on when it becomes most.
All right, but let's be
expedient.
Fair. The CBC didn't take an official stance.
No,
on
I'm not
that,
saying
so
they are. I'm saying
if,
the concept
I don't know
of
if
the
comparison
presumption
is
of innocence.
Fair.
It's kind of apples
right,
and oranges there.
Yeah, yeah.
Not necessarily.
I think that's I think since they didn't take an official stand, we'll stay away from that one. All right, let's move on to what is an interesting defense that we're hearing out of the defense team for a white man accused of a racially motivated beating of a black man in Howard Beach last summer. What the defense team has done is they've called a Harvard University professor who has written a book about the N-word. And what they're trying to say now, that the word has become so complex that the word now takes on many different meanings and connotations. It can be pejorative. It can be friendly. Marcelo, and what they're suggesting here is this white man used it in a way, not in the old sense that whites would use it, but in today's form, a kinder, friendlier N-word, if you will.
Well, this is sociolinguistics.
And the ironic part here is the professor is African American, the Harvard professor.
Yes, this is Professor Kennedy at the Professor Kennedy at the Harvard Law School, a very eminent scholar at the university. Well, this is sociolinguistics 101. Surely all words have a social life, and for all words, context matters. Clearly, the issue here is what is the intent of the word, and what is the expected reaction the word is supposed to have, and what is the intended target, what is the meaning the intended target of any word is supposed to have. So in a way, it seems to me that this will have to be placed in the context of the allegations against this gentleman, and the jury will have to make up its mind as to whether we're really talking about a somewhat esoteric sociolinguistic exercise or whether the intent clearly was racially motivated and marked.
And, you know, we might want to have... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Here's what's interesting, Joe, and then pick up on your point. The idea that, and this is what a lot of older African Americans were fearful of, the idea that that word is used so freely today that we see other ethnic groups using it in a very casual way in public, and the concern that the power of the word has been softened, if you will, in the sense of how it affects African Americans on a visceral level. And we should note that Professor Kennedy has written a book entitled, I'm getting ready to say the word, I'm not going to use N-word because this is the title of the book, Nigger, The Strange Career of a Troublesome Word. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I was wondering if we were allowed to say the word, and even during this conversation. I find the word personally offensive, and I think we also might want to have a debate over whether or not this the defendant in this case even can be called a gentleman, even though he hasn't been convicted of anything yet. But according to one article, it says that he reputedly spewed the epithet in anger while chasing Mr. Moore and beating him on the head, and this was with a baseball bat. But at the same time, his defense is that he was just using this in the same way he might call somebody pal, I guess, while beating his pal on the head with a baseball bat. I mean, I
doesn't
think
look
that,
like a good pal to me.
I think it shows the intent behind this word, given the context in which it was used. And I also think it speaks to a larger issue that That the word now has become more available to the public, if you will, through its use in a lot of hip-hop and rap records. Many of these records clearly are purchased by white music fans, and their purchase of the records is certainly okay. But the word, using the word by black people, presumably as a term of endearment for other black people, then allows it widespread currency.
And let's
personal
be honest,
level,
Joe, not just in rap records and rap music. You can go to any large urban mall today in any city and hear that word thrown around freely.
That's right. On the bus, on the subway, walking down the street, there's no question about it. I don't know how many times I heard it yesterday.
Well, I was always taught that the power of life and death is in your words. And what happens, you can't expect white America to understand the stigma attached to this word in this day and age when you have a younger generation of African Americans making millions of dollars in hip hop and videos and everything else, using this word freely as if it were a term of endearment, as we've already said. It sends a confusing message, and it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Do we have any idea? Do people realize what the origin of the word, the N-word, has come from? It's a word that originated in hate, and it goes to show the hip-hop hypocrisy that we've allowed to take place within our own communities. I mean, who's responsible here, really, for the change in the connotation of this word? We are, because we've turned a blind eye, to the most part, because it's become economically beneficial to hundreds of young urban blacks who are making millions of dollars in the music industry.
Well,
and
but
in
let's
pop
be
culture.
Realistic there, Tara, too. The real people that are making real money on that are not just the performers, but more so the record companies and those who control that end of it. And those are mostly white males.
That's true, but when C. Dolores Tucker and Bob Dole back in 96 came out against the record companies asking them to have more corporate responsibility, the black community, there were many in the black community and in the hip-hop community that said that C. Dolores Tucker was selling out her own people because this was a form of expression. So there needs to be consistency here. And in the Mannucci case, I don't think that as deplorable as his actions may have been, he's facing 25 years in prison potentially because of his use of the N-word, which makes this crime a hate crime, right, as opposed to a regular assault case.
And I think that would be the real difference there.
That's why the defense has pulled this out.
Right, that's the heart of a hate crime, in that it's a category of people. It's not just a single individual that comes under assault, but a whole category of individuals that are covered by the crime.
And if you use the word while beating somebody in the head with a bat, it seems like that indicates, provides the prosecution clearly with some evidence of a hate crime.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily, because this individual here conducted himself, and admittedly, he loved hip hop and he hung around in a racially diverse neighborhood. And when in a situation like this, when the N-word is so convoluted, and 25 years of someone's life, like, I'm not saying that he's innocent or what he did was acceptable, but to have a 25-year sentence at stake here over a word as convoluted as the N-word is in this context,
but let's be honest
and with
about
someone
this,
who openly
let's
admitted that they were there
this.
To commit
you
a crime.
You can have a kid in a racially diverse neighborhood who's grown up on hip-hop, who lives next door to African-Americans and Hispanics and whomever. And these kids, I mean, sometimes we don't give enough credit to these kids in terms of what they do know. They do understand, maybe not the deep-rooted sense of hatred, but they understand what that word means.
I think they do. But I think that's correct. But in that same vein, to go back to something you raised earlier, Ed, I think that we cannot allow the hip-hop artists, the rap artists, and any others who use this word to kind of escape any responsibility and put that on the companies, because the companies are making money. It's true, white men control these companies and they're making a lot of money off of the.
Don't get me wrong. I wasn't trying to lay blame there only. I'm saying this blame goes wide and across the board.
I think that's true, and I think to the extent that we've allowed this word, even in certain segments of the black community, to become a term of endearment, is it really speaks to a horrific lack of vocabulary. I mean, there are all of these words out there with which we could use to express endearment to somebody, and we pick a word that has been used to oppress the black community for decades, for generations, for centuries. You know, it's hard for me to understand
And this horrific lack of vocabulary, as you put it very well, in the age of global communications, really is generating very, very unsettling dynamics. This is a world now that has global existence. Professor Kennedy indicates that among immigrant children coming into our country, he mentions, for example, in San Francisco, immigrant kids coming in from Asia, Vietnam, other parts of the world, use the term now as a regular part of their vocabulary as they're learning English. This is the words and the terms of endearment that they, without understanding the history, without understanding the emotional valence of the word, are using in their everyday quotidian speech.
Yeah. Well, it's just another example of the dumbing down of our culture. And we need to stop accepting mediocrity. Enough is enough.
All right. On that note, we will stop because we don't have enough time to get into what I really wanted to get into today, and I promise we'll get to it next week, and that is a charter school in Los Angeles when we talk about hatred in this country and the whole question of the backlash for immigrants has fallen into disfavor with a KABC morning news program radio host, and it really has caused a furor out there. We'll get into that in terms of what is racist and what is cultural pride. So we'll talk about that next week. Joe Davidson, Tara Settmeyer, Marcelo Suarez Orozco, thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ed.
We'd like to remind our listeners, if you have any comments on any of the topics you've heard on the roundtable or any of what you hear on News and Notes, you can call us and comment at 202-408-3330, or you can email us, send that email to npr.org, and click on Contact Us. Be sure to tell us where you're writing from and how to pronounce your name.